Oh, by the way, Pierre Gasly was also on pole position. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Six to one odds of the bookmakers, that one was, by the way. Yeah, fun one. Yes, welcome to episode 684 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly host, Dre Harrison. Good to see you as always, folks. And I've got a big doubleheader this weekend. Not only have we got the Italian Grand Prix, which we're now about to talk about for the next 45 minutes to an hour or so, we also have IndyCar season finale, round 18, at the Grand Prix of Monterey, a.k.a. Laguna Seca. We'll talk about that in our next episode. But safe to say, this one made some headlines. Kimi Antonelli wins a Grand Prix from 19th on the grid. At home, to be Italy's first home winner in 60 years. Kind of a big deal, and that one.
Next to the places you can find us.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that pretty much does say it all, really.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm joined, as you can probably already tell, by my lovely co-host, Mr. Cameron Buckley. Hello, sir.
Hello. You know, we should have known. The second we saw that trophy, which, if you haven't seen it, because this is not a visual medium, is just a stack of various bowls and apparatus to eat and drink from, that at the end of all of it, the small Italian child would be eating pasta out of a bowl.
One, it's almost weird calling a man who turned 20 last week a small Italian child now, although he is still definitely small. We just can't call him a child anymore. It's weird.
Yeah, for his birthday, his entire team just raided him with, like, cream cakes.
Yeah, it was like, I was like, to seeing it happen on Thursday, having to describe it, I had to use very delicate language. I was like, creaming was like the most PG term I could describe it as.
Thank God Ryan Eric King is not on this episode.
He would have had a field day with this one, I can assure you. He turned 20 over the week, and that was only one number more than the grid spot he won the race from. We'll talk a little bit about that. The fact that Pierre Gasly was on pole position, that was a real thing. Team Enstone's first pole position in, 17 years?
2009. So what was it, Hungary with Alonso on pole? A hateful, awful race car.
That was a horrible car, and yet Fernando Alonso found a way to get it on pole. Yeah, I'll give him this. The man is a bit good at race cars every once in a while. So we'll talk about that. What next for George Russell, who's just been punched in the chest repeatedly for the last 3 days? Ferrari, who decided to self-implode again. And a bunch of news.
Where you've heard that one before.
No kidding. And a bunch of other news as well, because it looks like we're going to get yet another calendar change for the year. Lando Norris invested in junior motorsport. That's an interesting one. And we'll preview a little bit of the Madring, which is coming up this weekend. A brand new track on the calendar. Oh, boy. We'll talk about that as well. We'll do the places you can find us at the end of the show, because we want to get right into the action on this one. So, without further ado, let's talk about the 2026 Italian Grand Prix. No, the intro really wasn't a joke. Pierre Gasly really did end up on pole position with a brilliant lap, putting him ahead of George Russell by 6 hundredths of a second. The race had a dramatic start as Charles Leclerc ran Lewis Hamilton off the road at the first chicane after Lewis attempted to pass him at turn one. A lap later, Leclerc misses the turn in the Parabolica, runs wide, puts a wheel on the paint on the outside, spinning him out into the inside fence at 60 Gs. Not fun. The red flag came out shortly afterwards to repair the barrier because it got stuffed on that one. So we have a red flag. We have about half an hour delay to fix the barrier. Four laps have gone and we get going again. Standing restart as per procedure nowadays in Formula One. And, well, by the time we got to the end of the first lap of that restart, Kimi Antonelli, who had to start from 19th on the grid after taking a back-of-the-grid penalty for taking a new power unit, or three new power unit components at least, he's now 8th. And he was picking off these dudes with a quickness. By the end of lap 15, he's in the lead fight. But it was George Russell and Max Verstappen had already been going at it for a good few laps by then. And yeah, Antonelli was all of a sudden there as well. This would go on for a hot minute until lap 26. Now, this is a key moment in the race. Lance Stroll has to retire due to his Aston Martin suffering a hydraulic failure. This is a stick or twist gamble. Do you go to the end of the race knowing it's 50 laps on the tyre you're on to make the flag, or do you come in under a VSC knowing it's going to be about a 15-second pit stop and try and gun them down on the quicker rubber? Only two dudes took that option, Max Verstappen and Kimi Antonelli. Antonelli had to do it because he had to run a second compound. He was one of the few, he was the only person that started on the hard compound tyre.
Well, he had taken that medium tire, but he will have had to do all but four laps of the race on one set of mediums. So it was a no-brainer for him to do the VSC stop.
Verstappen matched him. He came in right behind him. They were the only two of the front runners that gambled. They came in, and well, again, Antonelli and Verstappen made very quick work of that upper midfield group, the McLarens, Gasly, and then were quickly running P2 and P3 again. Antonelli was taking chunks out of George Russell, who was trying to win the race while surviving on, by the end of the race, a 50-lap-old hard tire with three to go. A lap after Antonelli had actually put it in the gravel, couldn't get the thing turned at turn two. A lap later, he's back on George, and, well, George runs out of battery on the run to Ascari. Antonelli passes him. He takes off, sets the fastest lap of the race on the final lap, just to put the exclamation point on it.
Sebastian Vettel special, Dre.
Yeah, I was like, that boy, nice, you know. And with it, he takes the win. The first win for an Italian at Monza since 1966 when England won the World Cup. And from 19th on the grid, it's the second furthest away anyone's ever won a Grand Prix from. The only person to ever win a Grand Prix from further back, John Watson in Watkins Glen back in 1983. He won that from 22nd on the grid back then.
It's going to be hard to win a race from further back than that because we're not letting any more teams in here.
So yeah, you'd have to be stone dead last just to tie it now, yep. Basically, at this point. But that was back in 1983. So, for lack of a better term, Cam, a literal historic win for Kimi. And if you're the Tifosi, hey, okay, disappointing day if you like Ferrari, but hey, getting a home winner for the first time in 60 years ain't a bad plan B now, is it?
No, not at all. You can trade the red for silver because let's just say Ferrari did not cover themselves in glory in any sense of the word here. The F2002 was the best thing about this weekend for Ferrari.
Absolutely.
But yeah, Antonelli was fucking unbelievable, honestly. It's hard to put a lot more adjectives on it than that. He was incisive. He was smart when he needed to be smart. He was aggressive when he needed to be aggressive. And as it turns out, fitting the best power unit to the most efficient car at Monza is going to be a hell of a mix. Dudes for fun.
He was picking them off. Like if you've seen the onboards, which F1 has released since then, he's scything through these dudes. It's like playing F1 26 and the difficulty's only at 40%. You can pass them however he wants, whenever he wants, and he was scything through people. To put it into perspective, I saw from F1 Daily Graphs on Blue Sky, his average race pace was half a second faster than anybody else during this race. Now, again, you've got to factor in the fact he was on softer rubber for the last 25 laps or so, but even still, that's incredible.
Softer rubber for the entire race, right? Because he basically got two mediums out of this race as opposed to ditching the medium early for the hard. So it's kind of weird in that his pace was so good, it probably wouldn't have ended up mattering very much. But because we got the red when we did, almost everyone else takes a free stop.
Yeah,
he takes a free stop, but it's on the mediums, so there's no way he's going to make the end.
Yeah, it was a very interesting strategy race in the sense of Monza is not known for strategy. It's one of the most rigid races on the book normally.
Stay one out of stopper, the pits. Simple as.
One stopper, medium hard. For those who don't know, Monza's the most expensive pit lane in Formula 1. I think it costs you 24 seconds for a green flag stop because of how fast you're going. So this is the most punishing pit lane out there. As Ruth Buskin would say, you go to the pits as little as you conceivably dare, basically. So the red flag kind of took the decision out of everyone's hands. You can avoid that 24-second deficit by being on a compound that can make it all the way to the end. You take that option every single time. Mm-hmm. And yet, the VSC came at the perfect time if you wanted to abandon that strategy, because the teams have the tire wear details. They have the information. So they know how much the tire's wearing out, and then they've got to make a call. Do you take a stop at 15 seconds, which is what the VSC penalty was, as opposed to the 24 you get from a fresh stop under green? Is that enough to make up on the track via having fresh rubber? And only two dudes took that gamble, and I think that was ultimately the right call. But to be fair, not by a huge amount. It was marginal.
I would actually say it was definitely the right call, but they were the only two in position to take advantage of it because they were in the exact right part of the track to get into the pits, swap the rubber, and get out. Everyone behind them, because for lack of a better way to put it, this was felt like a 2020 repeat where you've got the two Mercs beating the crap out of each other and then Max being like an annoying bee in the background buzzing.
Yeah, close
and
enough
then
where
everybody else.
Yeah, like Max was close enough where a bad pit stop or an error of some kind would have brought him right back into play. He was close enough to be a threat, at least in the first half anyway.
Max was close enough that they could not box George, because if they box George, it means double stacking, and Kimi would have lost that whole length of the pit stop, and he would have had to go through Max again.
Yeah, Max was in the perfect place to disrupt the ideal strategy for Mercedes, so they effectively had to split them. Worked out in the end. They ended up with the 1-2 finish regardless as a team, so you can't really scoff at that, but it was a very intriguing race. And in the sense of, it's great when the strategy plays out where they're only separated by maybe 4 or 5 seconds, because that means it's marginal, and there's other little factors at play that could alter your decision making, and that's what led to a captivating finish. You can't really complain. It was a really interesting. It was the perfect time for a VSC to force people into making a hard decision, and that's part of what made this so fun. And then, of course, you just get the back half, and Kimi just chews George alive. It's
he was so fast, and I mean, it's the fact that, like we said earlier this year, can he keep ticking boxes? This is very quickly switching from can anyone run him down to how early does Kimi win it? Because he now has a 66-point lead at the head of the field.
Mm-hmm.
The way it's trending right now, he's going to have a three-race. He's going to have three races in hand sooner or later.
I mean, yeah, like I said, 66-point lead. We think there's probably going to be one less race than expected as well. Now, we'll talk about that more in a little bit in a moment. But a small part of me does feel bad for George on this one. In the sense, I was like, this is one of those like angel and devil.
He did very little wrong, if we're being honest with ourselves.
It's weird in the sense of, like, there's an angel and there's a devil on my shoulder. The angel is telling me that George really didn't do much wrong. Okay, he didn't take pole position, but he did dispatch Gasly quickly to take control of the race. That wasn't really an issue. At the front, he did what he had to do with a 50-lap stint to have to manage a tire with. But at the same time, part of me feels sorry for George, because on the one hand, he probably still wins this race without the VSC.
Because he does win the race.
Yeah, like you're adding 9 seconds to Kimi's race time, roughly. Because you're assuming he can't do 50 laps on a medium. So, like,
which we saw on other cars that could not.
No. Like, George wins. George is, as arguably for the second time this season, had a safety car at the wrong time and completely yank him out of a win, which is unfortunate. But the same token, I do wonder if him fighting Max so hard early on did him in, because he's got a tire to manage, and he's dueling with Max very early on, and that's for a good prolonged amount of time.
I think it was more the dueling with Kimi, because the thing is, like, Max is on the same strategy as you. So fundamentally, like, he kind of has to fight Max. As soon as the Mercs were able to get Max out of the overtake zone, they dropped him like a bag of dirt. Overtake was crazy powerful. It almost felt like it was like an oval IndyCar race almost on a super speedway, where it was like managing the draft, only instead of managing draft, you were managing overtake and battery. Fighting Kimi as much as he did when he knew Kimi had an extra stop no matter what they did, probably not the wisest thing in the world. Because we saw about 10 laps from the end, Russell's right front tire starts opening up, and his pace just... It wasn't even like his pace was horrible, but it did tail off at the same time that Kimi's dipping below the 24s into the deep 23s. I was like, there's no way he's going to hold him off.
No, and even then he was only three laps short in the end. It wasn't like he was completely blown out. It was tight in that sense. And, you know, it could have gone either way on that one. You know, if Russell executes a perfect race, maybe he just about hangs on. But in any sense, just that's a body blow for George. You know, this was going into the weekend for George a gimme. Because there's no way from the back we expected Kimi to carve through this field the way that he did. And he does. And he wins from 19th. You started effectively from pole, given you got past Gasly on lap three. Like, and he's beaten you straight up. Now, don't get me wrong, not entirely on George this one, but so, that's got to be debilitating to sit at home and going, how the fuck did he beat me from 19th?
It kind of doesn't matter. And it almost doesn't matter that he beat him. It's the fact that Kimi just took the engine penalty, and at worst, he was going to finish second. He was so fast. George can't take any points out of the kid. You're not going to see a more brutal psychological body blow in, like, all of racing. It's like Russia 2021. Mercedes gets the call right, and Lewis wins that race. They defeat McLaren because McLaren got it wrong. What the fuck is Max doing here in P2?
Yeah, it's like
it's exactly the same thing.
I had my own one with Vettel, Brazil 2012, when he gets put to the back by Bruno Senna early on and then has to come back through the field. There's a safety car in the middle of the race, and Alonso, who's thinking he's got one hand on the title with Vettel so far back, looks behind him, and he sees Vettel directly behind him. He's like, how?
Oof. It was shades of Abu Dhabi 2012, because everything would tell you, oh, you're having to start from the back in Abu Dhabi, and Seb just came barreling through that field. Even screwed up the race for himself driving into the DRS sign, if we recall.
I remember that. He had to do the work twice. He came from the back of the field twice and still ended up third. He was only a handful of seconds off the win by the time the race was all said and done. And that was probably a title-winning performance, given how close it was down
it
the stretch.
It was a title-winning performance. He didn't have it because Alonso still finished ahead of him. Mm-hmm. He was second that race behind, you know, that was Kimi's famous win. Mm-hmm. But it's just, you don't do performances like this without being as special as Kimi is. And he was unfucking believable on Sunday.
That's one of those wins where if he wins the world championship at the end of the year, which is looking very much like he will, the way things are going, we're going to remember this one for a long, long time. Like
this. Last time a Mercedes badge car started from that far back and won was the 2005 Japanese Grand Prix.
Kimi's greatest
win. We all
win.
Know that one.
It's on my shelf right over there.
One of the greatest F1 wins ever seen. Still, for me, maybe the greatest F1 race ever. It's right in that conversation for me. No, it's a special victory, and that's one of those ones where I think you call it a signature win. Like, you know, like Vettel at Singapore 13 or Hamilton at Brazil, you know, Hamilton in 2008 at Silverstone when he just completely destroys the field in the rain, or Alonso in Valencia where he wins from 11th on the grid. You know, it's one of those ones where you just go, that's the one. That's the one you're going to remember a guy for forever. And yeah, that's pretty special. And if you, I mean, George was interviewed by, and you probably know him from the F1 Nation podcast and other places on F1 Media, Tom Clarkson, who they interviewed him after the fact, and he said, well, Kimi's definitely in control of the title. I'm not even thinking about a comeback. He said turning things around would be exceptionally challenging. I'm just sort of accepting that it is what it is, and I'm just going to enjoy it from here on in and try as win as many races as possible. That sounds like a man who's already given up.
He literally hit us with the "it is what it is." Racing car driver version of "aw, dude." We're running out of "aw, dude." Would you like to continue? I mean, if you're George Russell, like, you drove a Williams, which was just rotten. You join Mercedes, they forget how to build a car. You beat your 7-time world champion teammate 2 out of 3 years. He leaves. You get number one status. They remember how to build the car. And suddenly, you've got prime Michael Schumacher just erupt out of the other seat.
I said it before. Russell's 2025 was a championship season in all but car. Like, he was incredible last year.
If you said he was the best driver in the field, I wouldn't have agreed, but I would have heard you out.
He was number two on my list last year. Said it before. He was magnificent last year. He was good enough to give McLaren something to think about in terms of average finishes, because he was so consistently great in that Mercedes last year and extracted the maximum out of it pretty much every weekend except Brazil and Monaco. And Monaco wasn't even his fault. He was so good. And this year, it's just completely turned the opposite way. Last year, Kimi had his moments last year, but he largely struggled against Russell, and now it's gone the complete opposite way. It's incredible.
That's the problem. Like, Kimi had a couple moments late last year. You look at Brazil, and he's like, okay, like, this kid's got something. He's just got to do it more often, but he's got something. And this year, that something is every week. He's turned into Toto Wolff stole our line. He must listen to Motorsport 101. He's like a learning computer. He's like a fucking Terminator. He's just absorbing information constantly. He's brilliant on his tires. And he's fast as hell. And you're in a car that is as good as the Mercedes is, that still has not had a significant upgrade since Canada. We're waiting until the not Malaysian Grand Prix, presented by not Malaysia, to actually see a big package on this car. And they've got an engine upgrade plan because, of course, the regulations for upgrading power units in this regulation set is stupid. Because Mercedes needs extra help.
Power's power.
Pain is power and power is life. That car is so good at things like this. When it's efficient, when it's the middle stuff, where it is efficiency over everything.
Power stuff.
And we've
track.
Not even seen its final form.
Yeah, this was always going to be a Mercedes juggernaut. They're at their best on the power stuff tracks, and Monza is number one on that list with a bullet. And
they destroyed McLaren. They carpet bombed McLaren. And McLaren actually salvaged a pretty decent race out of it, all things considered. But they got destroyed by Mercedes here.
18 seconds. Well, that's a pretty significant gap over the two McLarens in the end, who, again, were having the hot talk, having the talk about a title push for Lando Norris, and that quickly got shut down. We warned you last time out, we talked after Zandvoort, that Monza was going to be a rude awakening for McLaren, and we were
right. That's going to be a running theme here of teams that aren't as good as Mercedes thinking they had a shot at a title. More on that later.
More on that now. I've had enough. Ferrari.
Speaking of having enough.
So, Ferrari. Okay, not the best qualifying session. They end up locking out row two. Okay, not the worst. We've got Hamilton sending one on Charles on lap one. Charles runs Lewis out at the exit of the chicane. That didn't go well. Hamilton drops to the midfield briefly. And then a lap later, it's all for naught because Charles, who's having to fend off Oscar Piastri at the Parabolica, he puts two wheels on the green where the drilling is on the outside of the Parabolica while keeping his foot in it. Big snap of oversteer. Fence.
Well, the thing is, he fucked up even before then, Dre, because he missed his turn in for the Parabolica. That's why he ended up out there. He just completely got the corner wrong.
Yeah, it's not great. I'm trying to defend him a little bit here in that Oscar had kind of like had half a look to try and pass him there. So he was already compromised in terms of his line to a degree because he's respecting the fact that Oscar went for a lunge. He was never going to get there personally, but you know,
Detrimental. We saw people all race that they could have tried into Parabolica, but you're better off just drag racing them on the main straight.
Yeah, so
the slipstream and the overtake mode, dude. I'm gonna be real with you. We are in year 9 of Charles Leclerc.
Mm-hmm.
This is not cute anymore.
It's not.
I am someone who thinks he is the second most talented racing driver, perhaps on the planet Earth.
I typically agree with you.
That was dog shit. It's the not biggest great. Piece of dog shit I've ever seen, to quote Dwayne Johnson.
Look, I am typically a bit of a Charles defender because I think he gets a bit of a bad rap on the internet sometimes. I mean, I've talked about it before on this show. I think he's an incredible talent, and I think public perception has turned on Charles in the last couple of years, and I maintain, I think he's had a bit of a bad rap compared to others on the grid this season because Charles had a free race poor spell. You know, Monaco, which ultimately ended in his brakes failing, if we take him at his word. I don't pin Monaco so much on him, but he did crash.
No reason to not believe him.
Yeah, you know, again, the qualifying crash in Spain. And of course, that was a race that Lewis Hamilton, the most popular man in Formula One, would go on to win. You know, off the back of him finishing second in Monaco and then second the round before in Canada. So Charles got a lot of flack in the press for that, and I was largely quite defensive of him on this one because I think a lot of the buzz was because it was Lewis at the front. And we all know that's a very rational fan base.
Still rational, given their response to this weekend.
Well, I'll get to him later because I'm not happy with him either.
All the vibes at Ferrari are quite bad right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've always maintained that Charles Leclerc is a bit like Russell Westbrook. He likes to play hero ball, and he's done that many a time in his career. Or I think he almost feels like he's got a responsibility to. It's a mini version of Yoann Mir. Because Yoann Mir, when you always ask him about his crashes in MotoGP, says, look, I'm going to try and take this thing beyond the limit to see what I can get out of it. Because in his belief, that's the only way he's going to be able to progress the manufacturer. I think Charles is a smaller, obviously not anywhere near as extreme a case, obviously. But I still think Charles has this bad knack of overdoing it too much. Because he feels like he's got to be that guy.
The problem is, Dre, is that he's had that tagline for what it feels like since like 2019. When the Ferrari was fast enough to win the occasional race, but more often than not, just unequipped from a chassis perspective.
Mm.
And that's to say nothing about the power unit situation that year. But in 2020, he literally did a worse version of the same crash.
Yeah.
And so if you're going to be the second best driver in F1, and I believe on the body of work up to this year, he has been for most of his time in F1, he's got to grow out of the shit. Because if what you are is spectacular and fast as fuck and the best qualifier in the world and you chuck the car at a wall 3 or 4 times a year, you're John Alesi with a better car. And I don't want him to be John Alesi with a better car.
He's way better than that.
He's had better cars to work with than John did, that's for damn sure. It's exhausting because Charles, Max did this constantly up to a point in 2018. And then you know what he did? He stopped fucking crashing.
It's doubly annoying because this largely stopped in 24 and 25. Well, 24 and 25,
in 24 he was one of the most consistent drivers in the field. His consistency, Dre, in 2024 almost won Ferrari Constructors title.
Yeah.
Because he was just Iron Manning a car that for portions of the year was just not on the boil.
No.
They lost their whole middle of 2024 due to a bad upgrade package. He is the reason they did as well as they did. And he's not been good enough this year to justify it because he had that 3-race really poor spell, but the stuff that hasn't been horrible still hasn't been that good.
It's weird in a sense of, and I'll talk more about Monza directly in a second here, but you're right. Lewis Hamilton, the key stat which people keep making social graphics out of, Lewis has finished in the points every race so far this season. He's actually not finished a Grand Prix lower than 6th this year. 13 races in, he's had 13 top 6 finishes. That's really consistent. And don't get me wrong, Hamilton's been far from perfect himself. He's made a lot of minor mistakes.
Was going to get into that later when we get to how his race went.
But the problem is, I said this on Fred's about 20 minutes before I went online today. Yeah, people still use that shit. I know, it's crazy. But the problem is that, and this is my theory, we as human beings remember the bad so much more than we remember the good. And the problem with Charles is the bad is spectacularly stupid.
Yeah, this was like a worse version of what Max just did in Zandvoort, where Max had pretty much the same thing of just, he just touched a part of the wrong part of the track and it just shot him sideways into the outside retaining wall. And that's it. Like, when Charles tends to do it, it's stuff like crashing into the castle section in Baku. It's stuff like binning in at Imola out of the podium spot in 2022 when he was leading the championship. And I feel like that sticks more in my mind more than France, where he was just trying to get blood from a stone from a race that Max was about to butcher him in. Because Ferrari let themselves get undercut, but also up against a much superior car. When Charles crashes, it's usually like an airplane crash. And usually it's just a silly-looking driver error.
Like I said, it's high profile. And given the way human beings are calibrated, those are going to stick out so much more than all of the good shit that he's done. And there's a lot of good shit that Charles has done in his tenure at Ferrari.
Honest, Dre, you don't get much more high profile for the Tifosi than wiping out on the second flying lap at Monza.
Again.
Just ask Sebastian Vettel, where that was basically the death of his stint at the team.
Yeah, public perception shifted to Charles originally very quickly after that one. I haven't forgotten. Yeah, I really do appreciate Charles as a driver. I think he's fantastic. But I thought he had ironed this out of his game the last couple of years. I thought 24 and 25, I was thinking, okay, he's largely got rid of the nasty streak of having the big one once a year. Because, again, people remember that shit. And unfortunately, it's reared its ugly head because he's had two pretty nasty big ones this season in terms of, like, the bad spell at the top of the season, and now this. People are going to remember that more than anything else has happened in red this season, and people are going to start talking. And that's not entirely fair, because Charles is still holding his own against Lewis overall this season by most major metrics. It's just, what are you going to remember first? The Tifosi crash.
I'm not even looking at that, and this is where I'm going to talk about, like the comment that Vix put in the chat as well, where Lewis got destroyed by his teammate two seasons in a row coming into the season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Russell handled him pretty fucking emphatically in 2024. Not every race, but most races.
Most of them.
And then Charles blew him away last year, just in every conceivable metric. These cars clearly suit Lewis better than the old ones did. That's going to be part of it. Maybe this Ferrari suits Charles less than last year's did.
I think that's it
a part of it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's absolutely a part of it. But it's also up to someone who I regard as the second best driver in Formula One to put that talk down and to go out and do the job. And it is easy for Lewis to make comments about how Ferrari needs to stop caring about Charles and galvanize around me when Charles just broke a car in half into the wall.
If you're going
to
take
the Lewis to say that,
as I said it on social media, if you're going to take the moral high ground, a weekend where your guy ends up in a catch fence, it's a pretty good week to do it. And even before,
and I don't. Yeah. Look, do I think Lewis is out of pocket for doing that? Sure. I also wouldn't expect anything less of him. He's a 7-time Formula One World Championship winner. It's you don't do that by not being a ruthless bastard. Just ask Nico Rosberg.
And don't get me wrong, I've got no problem calling Lewis out to be a hypocrite, because I think he has been on this occasion. Mm-hmm. And look, if you want the embodiment of where these two drivers are at and in the context of their seasons, this is the one, because this was a big Tifosi pressure round. And look, I think Ferrari got it slightly wrong by letting Hamilton stay the course on his mediums, but I understand why they made that decision.
I don't think they had a choice in the matter, because if Lewis does pit during that VSC, it ends with him in the air. Like, he was too far back to take advantage of it, because it ended as Antonelli and Max left the pits. Lewis would have lost more than he would have gained. That said,
he ended up 25 seconds off the win as a result.
Yeah, you know why? Because Ferrari doesn't have a fast enough car.
Nope.
And that's what it ultimately boils down to. All the talk about pushing for a title campaign, team orders, doing the team orders to get their way between the Mercs. No. Because Ferrari came here with a Monza special aero package, an upgraded power unit, and a Schumacher F310 tribute livery. And the response by Mercedes was aiming a Spass 12 at their chest repeatedly, like it was a scene out of Snatch. All bets were, in fact, off.
Cam, pull your socks up.
Do you know who this track belongs to?
Exactly.
A Kimi Antonelli now.
Yeah, I mean, Lewis just turned up. Lewis turned up the wick in the media this week. I mean, even before the race on Saturday, he said that he basically insinuated that Ferrari needs to go all in on him for a title push. He's now 76 points off the championship lead after this race. It's not happening. So, first of all, I think it's kind of bollocks, really, that Lewis knows exactly what he's doing, in the sense of he wants to turn up the wick, and he now wants Ferrari to bend to his will. The same Lewis Hamilton that said at the start of the season, I've had much more of a hand in development this year. He was the one that we know pushed Fred Vasseur for the brake change after the Japanese Grand Prix earlier this year. He's generally got what he's wanted at Ferrari since joining that team. And now Charles has had a bad weekend. He came out to the media again after the race and said, there's no we in this. Like, I was on the grass at turn two. And now look, I've watched that replay a half dozen times. If Lewis's car was painted a different color, we'd think nothing of it.
I would say a couple of things. I think Lewis going into the chicane was optimistic, but he had room. I have no problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
Charles kind of puts himself in a bad spot, because if he did maintain the line that he was on, he was going to crash into the back of George Russell.
So he was already kind of boxed in. Yeah.
Yeah, he was quite. Russell was quite slow through the second part of the chicane. But also, and Lewis Hamilton should know this better than just about any person currently living, generally, if you're on the outside of the chicane, the exit of the chicane at Monza, bad things are going to happen to you. Unless everyone is extremely cooperative. And Charles wasn't. They put him down the field. It ultimately didn't really matter much. Because Ferrari spent the entire race getting drag raced by every other power unit in their vicinity.
They were, as the kids say, drag maxing.
Yeah, they were getting bodied by the McLarens, and it's like he and Piastri yo-yoed for like the entire first stint of the race, because overtake was so strong. Max drove away from them. If it weren't for Kimi Antonelli, Max would have gotten like the most earned driver of the day of the last couple years because he drove the tits off that Red Bull.
Broken
he was unbelievable
axle
this weekend.
Yeah, Max was incredible. He's pulling miracles out of that thing.
He broke Oscar Piastri's ankles into the Della Roggia chicane. I'm like, ah, there he is.
That's the one.
He's feeling better after Zandvoort. But Ferrari were the fastest car. Were the fourth fastest car here.
Yeah, and to borrow a line from earlier this season, you can't expect to go around the outside of a champion. Do you know who said that? Lewis Hamilton after the Austrian Grand Prix this season.
Funny how that works.
Yeah. You know, I thought
the McLarens at the end of the race were racing each other harder than that, and those two seemed to shake hands and be fine with it. So, like, Lewis wants to bend Ferrari to his will. That's his prerogative. But now with Ferrari, it feels like it's boiling over where media incorrectly think they're still in the championship. They're not. They never were.
No.
I think people really, really wanted... I think people wanted this to be last year didn't really happen. This is the Schumacher to Ferrari 2.0, where he's come in and he's influenced the car, and they're going to chip away until they are the best team. Mercedes blew their ass into the middle of next week. So did Red Bull. So did McLaren. And then... if that's boiling over and Lewis is publicly making these claims, how long is that going to last inside Ferrari?
Especially given you've got Charles Leclerc, who has been deemed the prodigal son, depending on who you ask in that camp, just signed an extension to keep him there for the next half decade, till 2031, from what I've been told.
He's not going anywhere.
No, Ferrari was almost like his destined team.
After everything that happened with his godfather, yes, it was.
He's a Ferrari lifer. That's more than obvious.
And the problem with that becomes, like, if this is boiling over this bad, and there's no title shot, Lewis has been better than Charles this year, but he's not been backbreakingly better. Lewis has accumulated... marginal. 5 or 6 really silly penalties. He saw Kimi Antonelli in the mirror and immediately bailed out in turn one this race and went flying off the road. The only reason why he didn't finish 7th this race is because Pierre Gasly and Lando Norris had a casual World War III for that position for about 8 laps in a row, and it held up Gasly. Gasly was running him down.
Yeah.
They are not fast enough to justify any of this talk, Dre.
I fully agree. Lewis has been better than Charles this year, but not by a huge amount. It's not by enough where I would categorically say, yeah, Ferrari should go all in on Lewis. No. He's not been comprehensively better enough where I could say, I'm not walking to Charles Leclerc's garage tomorrow and saying, Charles, we're shutting it down. We're all in for Lewis for the title now. No, he's too good not to do that right now.
The problem is, Dre, before this event, Charles had cut his gap to Lewis from 60 points to 28.
Mm-hmm.
And that was with Charles not driving particularly well. It's all been little errors from Lewis costing him points, like speeding in the pit lane over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, the jump start Silverstone, you know, putting George Russell out in Spa. You know, these little things add up over time. Like, you know, it's sloppy. And it's sloppy for a guy that we expect to be the greatest of all time. Now, and the problem is that at Ferrari now, this is not 30-year-old Lewis where he's in his prime and he might be able to bridge that gap in terms of shortcomings of car performance and maybe stick his nose in. Metaphorically, mind you. The Hamilton squeeze normally is more literal than that. But he's 40 now. He's 40, he's in the back end of his career, and he's lost half a step. And that's okay to say. This is not the Lewis of his prime. This is the Lewis in the twilight of his career, and we're seeing what's left. You know,
the problem for Charles is that this is Lewis in the twilight of his career, and he is beating him. And that's...
Yeah.
It's up to... Charles has to figure it out.
Which he will.
He better.
Because I
expect more out of him than what he's done this season. But Ferrari, it's like Ferrari conducted themselves, I think, again, fairly well for the first, I would say, third of this year. Where I would say the issue is not execution. The issue is the car isn't fast enough. It now still isn't fast enough. The drivers are openly feuding. Where is Fred Vasseur?
That was like that was the point I made at the end of my short this afternoon, and Cam stole my thunder on that one, because my next point was, where's Fred Vasseur in all of this? And don't get me wrong, I love Fred. Love Fred as
Everyone
a personality.
Loves Fred.
Everyone loves Fred. But the time for pleasantries is over. Your stars are acting out. One on the track, one off the track. And you need to get your boys in line, because this has been threatening to boil over for a little while now, and all the happy-go-lucky dream team vibes about Leclerc and Hamilton got shoved to one side as a direct result of this race. Charles Leclerc, in his defense, threw his hands up and immediately apologized. He fully owned his mistake and was like, yeah, this one's on me. My bad. This is awful. Won't happen again. Lewis is out here twisting the knife, saying that, oh, talk to the boss. Well, we can't get a hold of him right now, Lewis, so we're coming to you, the spiritual leader of this team now. So start talking, big man. So if you want to gallop, if you want this to be your team, start talking like it. Go all the way with it.
You want to be Michael Schumacher 2.0? You know what Michael Schumacher never, ever, ever did? He never allowed anyone to throw the team under the bus. They win and lose as a team. That mentality of sealing himself to Todd and to Ross Brawn and to Rory Byrne produced 5 consecutive championships. And that is what it took to bring order to the chaos that is Ferrari. You know what I think is happening inside Ferrari's walls right now? Is you just got two very heavily divided camps of people who want to build around Lewis, people who want to build around Leclerc. And that is going to tear that fucking team apart if they do not get a handle on it.
It needs to happen, because you know what? This is Ferrari. The media pressure is times by 3 compared to any other team on the grid, because it's Ferrari. And even more so because it's Lewis Hamilton, the most popular driver in the sport by a mile. Like, people are going to talk. People are going to tinfoil the shit out of this. And I've seen it on social media for the last few weeks. That camp has torn itself apart in terms of fandom. It is nasty out here in these streets. And it's not going to go away anytime soon unless Uncle Fred puts his foot down. You're meant to be the leader of this team. Get your boys in order. As far as I'm concerned, otherwise this is going to keep happening. Like, Charles should not have gone rogue on Lewis at turn one, but Lewis probably shouldn't have centered on him on the opening lap of a Grand Prix. Like, you know, it was all just so unnecessary, and that was even before Charles put it in the fence. At least the F2002 was there. At least Seb was there to put
a smile. F2002, best thing about Ferrari's weekend.
Best thing about the weekend. Oh, my God, that was beautiful. Oh, man.
I don't know, man. Those of you out there who aren't Kimi Antonelli believers yet, you should be.
Oh, yeah. No kidding. So we've got a couple of bits of news off the track before we get out of here, because we kind of already talked about Alpine being brilliant and whatnot. So,
Pierre Gasly. Low key.
Superb.
Maybe my 4th best driver on the year so far, if I had to rank it today. He has been
superb.
And you know what? Colapinto looked like he was putting together something good and then just chucked it off at Lesmo 1, but actually recovered to a pretty decent recovery.
Get you someone in life that G's you back up like the race engineer for Colapinto did after the
race. Absolutely.
Because, bless him, Colapinto was in tears when he got out of the car because he felt so bad about the tank slapper that he put on while he was running third off that restart. He came off at Lesmo 1 and dropped all the way back to 16th, came all the way back up to finish in 9th. He was apologizing to everyone on the team when he got out of the car. He was so upset with himself. And I'm glad that I'm glad that Alpine genuinely got behind him. And Gino was like, listen, mate, you've come back from 16th and you still got 9th. This is still really good points on the day. So, like, you know, and...
The Alpine upgrade package, at least in a very low drag environment, it worked. They were mile and a stretch best midfielder.
They weren't in the midfield.
They got pole.
Found out from Ruth Buscombe. They found a really nice pair of low downforce wings during preseason testing, and they stashed them, and they saved them specifically for this weekend, and it worked beautifully. Great work from Alpine. Great work from Team Enstone across the board in general. Great weekend.
So with how strong RB and Audi have been lately, a 7th and a 9th is nice points on the board.
Big points, which is amazing, given they actually lost 9 points because the International Court of Appeal kicked in.
Welcome back to the podium, Isak Hadjar. Get well soon.
Oh, yeah. Hadjar's missed this round. He's going to miss the next round at the Madring as well. You do not want to hit the wall with a broken hand, I can assure you. So probably a wise decision there.
Just as well, Dre. I mean, Liam Lawson missed this round too because Carlos Sainz collateraled his front wing via Nico Hülkenberg about 30 feet into the race.
Not the best day for the Red Bull teams in general, but no, like, I'll quickly explain this one because a lot of people seemingly just don't get this one. So for those who'd missed it, on Friday afternoon, literally during FP1 as it was happening, news dropped from the FIA International Court of Appeal that Pierre Gasly had to have his 2 5-second time penalties from Monaco reinstated. Now, a lot of people assumed this was because, oh, well, you punished these dudes for speeding in the pit lane and they had to serve their penalties in the race. It's fair for everybody if they put Gasly's time penalties back on. That was not the reason why. A lot of people don't read, and I'm saying this sincerely because I was a sicko. I downloaded the full 26-page meeting from the Court of Appeal.
He really is replacing Ryan Eric King.
Because I thought, this can't be the reason. Something's up here. So I downloaded the full minutes of that International Court of Appeal hearing. And it's towards the end, but 0.72 to 77. And this is, again, I'm open, and this is my interpretation of what was being written, because there were some big words used in this report, I can assure you. Long story short, and for those who don't know how this works, the pit lane is measured via timing loops. So you stick loops along the pit lane, and the time taken to pass through these loops is converted into an average speed. So what's happened here is that because, and if you remember Monaco, it's the first Monaco Grand Prix we've had, I want to say since 2012, where we've had 11 teams on the grid. So because of Cadillac's garage at the end of the pit lane, teams were cutting across the fast lane to the last timing loop to save time. And because of how awkwardly Cadillac's box was in the end of the pit lane. The reason why all these teams got speeding penalties was because they were cutting distance, literal distance, by cutting across the fast lane on exit. So when you go through these loops, you're going through it faster than expected, and then they're going, as an average, they're going above 60 kilometers an hour. Now, Alpine's evidence, which is why they put a right to review in and why it was initially accepted, was because there was not a formal process in regards to measuring the length of the pit lane. Everyone just takes the FOM's word for it because they're the official timekeepers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Alpine was like, no, they've measured the pit lane incorrectly. We actually didn't go over this speed. The speed counts a red herring. It doesn't matter how fast you were traveling. It's the average and the time taken. So the whole thing's a bit of a dummy in that sense. Even if Alpine thought the measurement was incorrect, which it may have been, in the report it openly says, we could have measured this pit lane different geometrically. They never changed the distance. They never told the teams they were going to change the distance. So at that point, it's up to the teams to use free practice to basically figure it out. You run the pit lane, and then you set your you calibrate your limiters accordingly. That's your job, not the FOM's job. So Alpine's like, well, we thought the pit lane was the wrong length. The FIA is like, doesn't matter if you think it's the wrong length. This is the length we had. It was an accurate measurement. You played to our whistle, not yours. Get out of my office. That's basically what this boiled down to. So Gasly's penalties were reinstated. The 10 seconds dropped him back down to 7th. And as Cam alluded to, Isaac Hadjid gets his first Red Bull podium finish in 3rd, only 3 months after the race was initially done. Great work, everybody. Alpine have their best weekend of the year, and they actually left Monza with less points than when they started. They lost 9 for Fugazi losing that podium and finishing 7th. Whoops. Bad beat, huh? Whoopsie. But,
Pinnacle of motorsport, my ass.
We can't even measure a pit lane correctly, apparently. And even then, when is a pit lane not a pit lane? When we don't tell you what the measurement is. Great. Anyway.
Came to me in a dream.
Credit to our man Ed Spencer, friend of the show on Twitter, for being the first to put this out there during the weekend as well. As we kind of predicted, Qatar and Abu Dhabi are almost seemingly not happening.
Why? What happened?
I'll use the Simon Patterson phrase. Continued geopolitical situation in the Middle East.
Agent Orange is still acting up.
Yes, afraid so. And as a direct result of that, it's probably going to be announced next week. Mohammed bin Salim came out a couple of days ago and said, but let's not get too hasty about this. No. It's not happening. We're not going to get Qatar and Abu Dhabi. Rumors are, yet to be confirmed, but almost certainly will be, Qatar and Abu Dhabi will be chalked off. And then the season finale will be at Imola on December the 6th.
Oh, well, Kimi's going to have a great send-off now, isn't he?
Man's getting a full-blown coronation.
A whole ass victory lap. Yeah, I'm not shocked at that really at all. Imola will be quite interesting in these cars.
I would say they're going to be interesting for two main reasons. One, it's Imola. That's bound to be interesting. And two, and I think this is the bigger
cold
one.
Cold as hell. It's going to be cold as fucking Imola.
I was on the Formula One Word with Sean and Jonty this past weekend. Check it out if you haven't seen it already. And we actually did a Google as to what Imola's average temperature is in December. And we found out the average range is between 2 and 9 degrees Celsius. 2 and 9. Like, there is an above 0% chance we get snow.
You know, pencil in Max Verstappen with the chain tire Red Bull. That's a good old throwback.
They put an F1 car on train rails the other day, and now we're going to bring back the mountain climbing skiing Red Bull car, clearly. Yeah, it's going to be colder than a motherfucker. Like, if you thought Canada was bad earlier this year, that was like 14. We're talking single digits here, most likely.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
well, Kimmy, if they give him another bowl of pasta on the podium, he's going to have like a fire underneath it to keep it warm.
Yeah, there's going to be, it's almost certainly going to be a coronation for Kimi Antonelli down there. They're going to pack the place out to see Italy's first world champion in, what, 60-plus years. So, yeah, that's going to be interesting. I'm curious to see what they do with F2 as well, because normally they run the last two rounds in question, Qatar and Abu Dhabi. It's like Bruno Michel's had to tear up his plans twice this year already, because he was meant to run in Bahrain and Saudi Arabia. Both those rounds got chalked off. They had to go to you know, Miami instead for the first time. That probably wasn't cheap to ship all the cars out there. Mm. And now it's nothing but flyaways until the end of the year, and he's got two rounds to make up. They're going to Monza. So they're going to Imola. There's no doubt about that, because it's Europe and it's cheap. But what round are you now going to have to go to in the middle of the calendar to make up for it? You going to go to Austin for the first time or something? Because that's going to be interesting.
That would probably make the most sense from a marketing standpoint.
Brazil.
Brazil would be cool. Time zone wise, Brazil. That would work all right. F2 at Brazil, that we are not ready for F2 at Brazil.
That would
war
slap.
Crimes. War crimes. War crimes exponential. Gonna have to fly the Michelin man in on emergency.
I want F2 at Brazil. I'm not hearing any other argument against this.
Bring him there and bring him to Coda. Travel won't even be that bad.
Yeah, that works. That works. So speaking of Formula 2, real quick, did you see the news cam?
Yeah. Vic has put in the chat, Alex Dunn through the Senna S. Death rolling in every burst.
Speaking of F2, did you see the news this week, Cam, that Lando is starting his own junior team?
I did. I didn't really read anything further into it, but I did see the news.
Yeah, for those of you, because to give you the full details, because he obviously only half paid attention to it, it's called LN4 Fusion, the new team. Basically, Lando has bought supposed assets from AIX, one of the bottom rung teams in F2 and F3, and combined with Dan Richards, the CEO, and Rene Rossin, who's the head of the ex-Prima family. So, you know, formerly Title Town, as we would say on this show. They are going to have definite teams in Formula 3, in Freck, and Italian F4 and British F4. They've already started the application process to be in Formula 2 next year and GB3. So, by the looks of it, the Lando Norris team is going to have a ladder all the way up to the final bottleneck, getting a guy actually into F1. He's also opening up a scholarship fund to help fund juniors to help get them up the ladder as well. Crazy news. Like, that is...
Good news, I think. Great news.
Yeah, I'm like... And look, I'll give Lando this. He's a very shrewd marketer. And he is the sort of rich guy who, if he puts a phone call in, can get a favor from his dad and other people he knows to put the money together to pull something like this off. This is like the most anyone's invested into junior motorsports since the F1 Academy. And if not, Lawrence Stroll pouring all that money in to help get his son up to F1.
Well, Andre, like, what have we talked about at length on this podcast before is that if you want to bring certain people in, if you want to be able to really do the grassroots level stuff, you have to be willing to lose money. Mm-hmm. You have to be willing to put your money where your mouth is and invest knowing that you're probably not going to get that back. Well, we just found someone who is. Their name is Lando Norris.
I think it's a great move. I think it's a great move for all parties. I think anything that makes that bottomless pit a little bit easier to traverse is objectively a good thing. In a perfect world, we'd want the ladder to F1 to be a true meritocracy. We all know it's not, and it probably never will be. But anything that can soften that burden, that helps get the best up the ladder and give them the opportunities that they deserve, is objectively a good thing, in my opinion. Funding, just objective, here's some money. You know, here's money for a GB3 seat in the UK or a British F4 seat. I mean, it's a big pool. He's in the two most prominent F4 series out there, Britain and Italy. He's got GB3, he's got F3, he's probably going to have an F2 team because there's no way Bruno Michel shuts that application process down. He'd be waxing lyrical about getting one of his own F2 drivers to have their own team. That's huge, marketing-wise, for the series as well. It's an objectively great move, and I'm glad. Because, look, it's going to be years before we could truly assess the success of this program. But the fact that he's prepared to lose that money and do it is exactly what the juniors need right now. They need really rich people who truly believe in it to back it. And that is objectively the right thing to do. And I'm glad that Lando has taken up that mantle. You know, it's one way of celebrating the new contract extension. That's for damn sure. Right. Get money on a back because he signed a new deal till 2030. Allegedly, $60 million a year, Cam. Fuck mm-hmm. you, money.
remember when we were discussing it in the server and there was a rumored number for Max's contract went around? And it's like, no way. It's going to be like something under 50 mil. Not necessarily.
No.
These teams are now throwing around big money to keep their name brand stars. Red Bull with Max, Ferrari with Leclerc, and now McLaren with Lando.
And they're intertwined branding wise. McLaren is Lando and Lando is McLaren. The papaya, the orange, the branding, all of it goes together.
The first driver's world champion since Lewis in 08.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. And Lando's the face of the organization at this point. You know,
it's not going to be Oscar Piastri the way he's been driving this year.
No, and I find it startling that he's not taking more of a bollocking in the media for being poor in form at the moment. It's laughable how much he's gotten away with it, quite frankly.
I think it was so bad to close out last year, we all kind of just got used to it, maybe.
Yeah, mate. I think it's also because people really like him. Like, he's a really witty, quite...
I really like Charles Leclerc, and I keep having to bomb him from a great height.
Yeah, like, people love Oscar because he's cute and cuddly, and he's got this really dry sense of humor that I think a lot of people like about him. And I think that's part of why he's with it.
He's turning into Mark Webber, too.
He really is, isn't he?
Yeah,
Jesus, shit. Before we get out of here, Cam, Madring this weekend... What do you make of it?
Well, first I'd start with a bulldozer.
He's gone full Denny with it.
I don't like it. Maybe it'll produce a good race. It tends to be the tracks that look awful to drive end up producing quite decent racing.
It's true.
Especially with these cars. I would say, depending on upgrades going into the weekend, I don't know, Lando win, Kimi P2, toss up for P3.
Yeah, I think McLaren could go quite well here. Lots of potential places to regen. I think there should be good for energy around there, which tends to put it a little bit more in McLaren's favor. A lot of low speed corners as well.
Over under on number of track breakups for the weekend with the asphalt coming apart.
1.5.
Say 2.5.
Just under.
we had that at turn one. We had that at the chicane at Monza, the outside of turn two. It almost ended Kimi Antonelli's race when he went out there.
It's gonna be according to Kira in the chat as well. It's gonna be hot as hell. Over 30 degrees apparently. It's probably gonna be another heat hazard race. Oh boy, it's going to be hot. C234 coming around. Oh, by the way, Formula 3 season finale next weekend. When they tested there last week, there was 19 red flags.
It's going to be that hot. Bet the farm on a mid-race Aston Martin retirement.
Scorching power unit due to tight packaging. I can see it now. It's always been inside of me. Sorry, that's a Sonic Unleashed joke. That'll do it for this episode of Motorsport 101. The Madring will be next week as we review that alongside another double bill because we're going to have a MotoGP at Misano next weekend as well. That's going to be a very interesting race this weekend. That could be another proper Marquez Bezzecchi Barney. Looking forward to that. But next time out, we'll talk about IndyCar season finale over at Monterey. I promise you it will be shorter than this episode. I can assure you of that. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. He's been Cameron Buckley, and until next time, arrivederci.
You know, we have to admit it. Sasha was right. It's terrible.
Yeah, that boy is nice, isn't he? Damn.
He is nice.
Mm.